Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link on this Wednesday, April the 11th. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. We are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up on the show, violence gripped Sierra Leone days after a new president was sworn in.
We don't know the exact number, you know, but some people actually lost their lives in particularly places like Kenema.
And South Africa gives a national farewell to late apartheid icon Winnie Mandela.
Mama Winnie was very supportive to us. Mama Winnie was very, she fight for our country. Mama Winnie will always remember Mama Winnie. I say Mama Winnie, today we are so sad because you fight for us.
These are just some of the stories we've lined up for you. But first, a listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. An Algerian military plane crashed soon after takeoff outside the capital Algiers on Wednesday, killing more than 250 people in what is believed to be the nation's worst ever airline disaster. Rescue teams were soon dispatched to the scene, with witnesses saying the plane had erupted in flames. Algeria's Army Chief of Staff ordered an investigation into the cause of the crash. In Sudan, a number of political prisoners have been freed from detention one day after Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir ordered their release for involvement in anti-government protests in January. Hundreds of opposition leaders and activists were arrested earlier this year for protesting against rising food prices and the devaluation of local currency. Freed opposition member Mohamed al-Khatib described his time in prison.
When I was first arrested, I was detained in solitary confinement in a security area in North Khartoum. It was a closed place with only a small slot to allow food and medicine. Then I was transferred to Koba Prison, in which the conditions were so bad as well, especially with six people in a very small room.
U.S. President Donald Trump has lifted a travel ban on citizens from Chad after a White House review found that the country had cooperated with the U.S. on improving its security standards. Chad was among eight countries targeted by the U.S. travel ban. Iran, Libya, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, Venezuela, and North Korea remain on the list. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. On Wednesday, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg continued his testimony on data privacy at the White House, saying that his own data had been sold to third parties. Appearing before a House panel, Zuckerberg once again apologized for failing to protect users' privacy.
We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. It was my mistake, and I'm sorry. I started Facebook, I run it, and at the end of the day, I'm responsible for what happens here. It's going to take some time to work through all the changes we need to make, but I'm committed to getting this right.
The hearing was accompanied by protesters outside who shouted that Facebook should be deleted and that their data should be recovered. In Germany, thousands of workers have walked out from their public sector jobs in a second day of nationwide wage strikes affecting more than 2 million employees. German labor union Verdi has demanded a 6% pay raise, but the federal government has rejected the demand as being too high. Wage negotiations are expected Sunday. And finally, thousands of South Africans gathered for a memorial funeral service to pay their respects to anti-apartheid activist Winnie Mandela, the widow of Nelson Mandela, who died last week at the age of 81. South Africa's Deputy President David Mabuza paid tribute to Winnie, saying she was a torchbearer of South African liberation. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. We are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Share and leave us your comments there, and we will get to them whenever we can.
And today we start off in Sierra Leone, where new president Julius Maada Bio has headed off on his first foreign trip to Senegal with the aim of setting up economic and political ties with his counterpart, President Macky Sall.
Now, but before President Bio left, he leaves behind a trail of blazing fire and attacks against opposition supporters in what is now being called a post-election violence. DW's Mutala Kamara in Freetown has been telling me about the severity of the violence.
When the final election's result, was announced, immediately after the announcement, there were reports, of political violence, across Sierra Leone. Starting from the capital here in Freetown, in the business, central business district, of Abacha Street, which is a very popular spot where in these petty traders, put in their stalls, to sell business. Most of their stalls were vandalized, and in other places, across Sierra Leone, in the eastern district, headquarters town of Kenema. There were reports, of supporters of the Sierra Leone People's Party, supporters attacking the opposition, supporters, and also in places like Kono.
I understand that the president of Sierra Leone, Julius Maada Bio, has intervened in there. He set up a committee. Can you maybe tell me the job of this committee?
Well, the committee came about as a result of a visit, by leaders of the opposition All People's Congress. They held a meeting with President Bio at his lodge. It was after that meeting that the president announced that the government has decided to set up an intra-party committee, which comprises members of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party and also, members of the opposition, All People's Congress.
And what's going to be the job of this committee now?
The committee is to work in concert with the Sierra Leone police to investigate all complaints of violence and intimidation.
And we understand that there are a number of casualties around Kono and Kenema. Do you maybe have a particular number?
Yes, we heard of reports. We don't know the exact number, but some people actually lost their lives in particularly places like Kenema.
Can you maybe tell me why some of these supporters of the former ruling party, the APC, were targeted?
This is not something new, in Sierra Leone. I was talking to an expert in governance, and this person actually told me that this is as a result, of the divide. He said Sierra Leone is badly divided between tribal and regional lines. So what is happening now is as a result, of the campaigns, that we have witnessed. Most politicians, they campaign on tribal and regional lines. So this is as a result, of that.
Mutala Kamara speaking earlier to me from Freetown.
And now let's step away from the African continent for a moment. U.S. President Donald Trump has tweeted and warned that Russia should get ready for missiles to be fired at its ally Syria following weekend's chemical attack near Damascus.
Now, reacting to the tweet, Russia has threatened retaliatory action against the United States if missiles are fired at Syria. DW's Washington correspondent Alexander Foname has been speaking to my colleague Amrita Chima.
This is highly unusual, especially for this president, because Trump himself has repeatedly said that he's not going to telegraph his moves, and he has repeatedly criticized other leaders for doing it, saying that America's enemies could use it to their advantage. And now he's warning Russia, giving away a tactical surprise, even talking, tweeting about the kind of missiles the U.S. may use, smart missiles guided by satellites, so now the Russians know.
Trump also tweeted that, quote, our relationship with Russia is worse now than it's ever been, and that includes the Cold War. That's his quotation. How accurate is Trump's assessment?
Well, what is true is that I would say the relationship between the U.S. and Russia has worsened rapidly in the last months, in the last weeks. The U.S. government has repeatedly imposed new sanctions on Russian officials and oligarchs. And also the president himself was very critical of Vladimir Putin. But we have to see the other part of this tweet where President Trump is talking that it doesn't have to stay this way, that the U.S. is ready to help Russia's economy. So there we see again this transactional president. And some Republican lawmakers here are assuming that the president might be negotiating by tweeting these tweets.
DW's Washington correspondent Alexandra von Namen.
And back to the African continent, specifically to South Africa. Thousands of people have packed the Orlando Sports Stadium in Soweto, Johannesburg, to attend the official government memorial service for former anti-apartheid icon Winnie Mandela.
Dressed in the colors of the ruling African National Congress, the mourners paid their last respect to Mandela, who passed away in a Johannesburg hospital on April 2nd at the age of 81, Subri Govenda reports.
This spiritual song and tribute accompanied the memorial in honor of the late anti-apartheid icon Winnie Madikizela Mandela. The mourners who packed the Orlando Sports Stadium included local residents from Soweto, the Mandela family, foreign diplomats, and high-profile politicians. Vice President David Mabuza gave this eulogy on the former wife of the anti-apartheid icon and late president Nelson Mandela.
You fought a good fight, leading the despised masses from the front. You grinded and crushed the tyranny of racial oppression. Despite their cruelty, humiliation, and torture.
Several grandchildren and great-grandchildren of Winnie Mandela also delivered tributes in memory of their grandmother. One grandson, Mambata Mandela, said he grew up at the home of Winnie Mandela. He described his grandmother as a leader who had fought for the people, lived with the people, and gave her life for the people.
I'd like to say this is a time of mourning, but also a time to celebrate the life of Umakhulu and her legacy, not for us just as a family, but us as the country and the world as a collective.
Some Soweto residents who attended the official memorial expressed their view that Madikizela Mandela was a remarkable leader who had always worked shoulder to shoulder with the people.
Mama Winnie was very supportive to us. Mama Winnie was very, she fight for our country. Mama Winnie will always remember Mama Winnie. I say Mama Winnie, today we are so sad because you fight for us.
Mama Winnie used to lead us. Mama Winnie used to stand in front of us holding hands with Desmond, Bishop Tutu and Reverend Chikane, making sure that we are safe, that they are not shooting us. Mama used to tell them straight that please do not shoot these children.
So we were struggling a lot. Mama Winnie was there for us. Oh, Mama, she was a pillar. We celebrate Impilo ka Mama Winnie.
South Africans all over the country will continue to pay tribute to Winnie Madikizela Mandela at prayer and memorial services throughout the country. The funeral service will take place at the Orlando Stadium on Saturday, and thereafter she will be buried at a cemetery in Johannesburg.
Subri Govenda reporting from South Africa.
Now let's take you to another story that we have been covering on our Facebook page, DW Africa. That is, five Cameroonian athletes are reportedly missing during the ongoing Commonwealth Games in the Gold Coast, Australia. We've been asking, is this a typical case of African athletes disappearing at overseas competition, or is there a real cause for concern?
Yeah, Antagana Ibrahim says it's instead abnormal that only eight disappeared. And he goes on to say, I feel sorry for those who have not done so. The regime in power has made life a hell for Cameroonians.
Baye Jeremiah says they just want to escape the happenings in Cameroon under the watch of President Paul Biya.
Ako Amadi says this is not typical of Africa or African athletes. People living under oppression have always used sports events to defect.
Wamtola Ba says that some people are running away from this hellhole, as he calls that Cameroon, isn't surprising. The surprise is that those responsible for creating this hell are in total delusion of grandiose nature.
So many people are actually supporting these athletes. Numvi Destein says, when we say the government is bad, some will think we just want to make noise. This is not the first time, it always happens.
There is a general support. They are saying that conditions are not so well in Cameroon and they have the right to disappear.
Yeah, but doing it the illegal way, I think that is
a big
question.
It's not the right way to go. Anyways, the final one from me, from Destin, who says, when we say the government is bad, some will think we just want to make noise. That is not the first time. It always happens.
Yeah, so for sure, I'm sure many people will be talking about this for some time, because we also had cases in Kenya where athletes disappeared in Australia, some boxers years back.
Yeah. Keep it, Africa Link.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the program. My name is Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. Africa Link is live on Facebook, DW Africa, so check us out there.
Coming up on the show, if you're a Ghanaian and you need a new passport or a government salary, you are going to need a PIN. And what is that?
Without a TIN, you can't do anything in Ghana. You can't open an account. You can't register for your passport. You can't even renew your driving license or have a new driving license. You can't register your land without a TIN. You can't do any business in Ghana without a TIN.
And Malawians are on the move to take on climate change.
This Gagambaula is very important, and actually it's natural. And this is 2018 and people are still burning up charcoals, and I'm thinking of maybe if we get to 2030, we will have no tree in Malawi.
We're going to go to that story a little later. But first, Sudan has started releasing political prisoners following yesterday's order by President Omar al-Bashir to pave way for national dialogue efforts. The report carried by the national agency News Sona did not say how many individuals would be released, but said that the move came in the spirit of reconciliation, national harmony and peace.
And it goes on to say the release opens the door to participation of all political forces to discuss the country's issue. Opposition figures in Sudan are regularly detained and parties who oppose al-Bashir face numerous state obstacles. I talked to Madi Crother from Waging Peace, an organization which has been raising the profile of human rights abuses in Sudan. Take a listen.
Obviously, we are delighted that people have been released, but I think people are right to cast doubts on why this is happening and, more importantly, why now. I think it was more a matter of political expediency for Bashir to release these detainees. There's a number of things coming up that he needs Sudan to have a very positive profile for. So the independent expert on Sudan is starting a visit soon. He's kind of undergoing a constitutional review process. And then something that's particularly relevant in the UK is we're having our strategic dialogue, which is a sort of high-level forum. We're having our next talks of that in Khartoum later this month. So there are a number of reasons that Bashir had to look good at this stage. And I think that's what has driven the releases now. So we shouldn't be very quick to, you know, pat Sudan and the regime on the back. We should be looking at the reasons behind this.
And we know the US recently lifted decade-long sanctions against Sudan. Mm-hmm. Was this part of the deal between Washington and Khartoum? What do you think?
I think it possibly had less to do with the US at this stage, though that is part of it. So we know that the US is now considering, after the lifting of sanctions, removing Sudan from the state sponsors of terrorism list. That's the kind of next phase to their engagement with Sudan. And so I think Sudan constantly has the back at the back of its mind the need to impress Western partners, particularly because its economy is in tatters currently, so it needs to open itself up to international finance.
The government says the move also gives a chance to discuss issues facing the country. But the question is, will this stop future arrests of opposition leaders and protesters?
I think that's a very good question and a good way of putting it, because there is nothing to stop them re-detaining these people. And that's why we need to look at systematic reform. The fact is that the National Intelligence and Security Services, which has recently had its kind of former and incredibly repressive director reinstated, a gentleman called Salah Ghosh, has already made it quite clear to the political detainees involved that their releases were in part conditional on them not engaging in protest-related activity again. So I fully see an opportunity arising where they will again arrest and detain large numbers of political detainees, because at that stage it works for them, and then get all of the plaudits for when they release them. So it's a standard game that Sudan is playing.
Do you think this is also a move to win over the opposition?
I would say no, but I think it's an attempt to make certain groups look weak in others' eyes for having dealt with Salah Ghosh or having cut certain deals. So I think there's there's gameplay playing going on, and maybe he's trying to appeal to certain factions rather than others, but actually divide and rule is how Sudan has functioned for years and years and years, and this is just perhaps another instance of that.
Madi Crother from Waging Peace.
Now, let's give you some of the responses to what you've been saying on these stories. We have Annie Yakuk, who said, "I guess the dawn is beginning to sweep through the African continent."
Pascal Okanimba seems to agree with that and says there is change everywhere in Africa except Central African states, Cameroon in particular, he says.
And we have Kwasi Amwafo Kudua, who says, interesting, good move anyway, but it's time for him to release power too. Thanks for all those responses. Keep your responses on DW Africa.
On the spot.
Beginning April, anyone without a tax identification number, otherwise known as TIN, will not be able to transact any business or live a meaningful life in Ghana. The Ghana Revenue Authority has, on the 1st of April, strictly implemented the policy which says without the TIN, a person cannot apply for a travelling passport, register a land, clear goods, nor register a vehicle or driver licence.
Now, among the restrictions, a person cannot obtain payment from a government agency, open a bank account or bid a contract. This directive has been considered as one of the most unfair directives by many Ghanaians. The general public, especially those in the informal sector, are agitating against it. Maxwell Sook reports.
That one, you know, that one doesn't have expiring dates, so you leave that part.
Okay. Bawo Kweku has just called into the Ghana Revenue Authority office in Tamale to register for a tax identification number, TIN for short. And the client officers are offering support to him. Kweku is a nurse and fears he could land in trouble if he fails to get a TIN.
Well, I've been told that without the TIN, I wouldn't be able to assess my salary. And then there are other transactions that I will not be able to transact without the TIN. So that has encouraged me to come and then register for it.
The TIN can be obtained within 24 hours after showing a valid passport, voter ID card, or a driver's license. This is to ensure tax compliance among Ghanaians and widen the tax net. Alex Jemfi, another client in the queue, was asked to get a TIN in order to apply for a passport.
It's a requirement now at the passport office, because I went for a renewal and I was told that without a TIN number, I can't have a new passport. So it was a surprise to me and I think a challenge as well.
Clients officer Doris Kotua says the TIN is very important for everyday life of any Ghanaian.
Without a TIN, you can't do anything in Ghana. You can't open an account. You can't register for your passport. You can't even renew your driving license or have a new driving license. You can't register your land without a TIN. You can't do any business in Ghana without a TIN.
Registration for a TIN is free for every Ghanaian. The Ghana Revenue Authority has established registration centers across the country to ensure everybody gets to register. Alhaji Aminu Suleimana Sachibu, head of the Ghana Revenue Authority, GRA in Tamale, said the codes are special to everybody.
It's unique to everybody and it is 11-digit number.
The GRA says this approach is part of a national drive to ensure tax compliance. Ghana has an estimated 6 million employees, but only 1 million individuals are registered with the GRA. But outside the confines of this center, others think the implementation of the policy is too sudden.
It is political dictatorship, because if you are to introduce something new, you must educate the populace to have interest in it, to convince them, to tell them the outcome of that thing that you are introducing. But you can't just come and impose something unexpectedly to people where they did not, either it is good for them or not, and you are bringing it. It's a political dictatorship.
It's a very good thing. It's a very good thing. It's a way of identifying the taxable population. As we speak now, less than 2 million of our population, over 29 million of our population, is paying tax.
Honestly speaking, I only heard of it yesterday. I don't even know what it is supposed to be for. I just heard somebody saying that TIN number. I don't even know what a TIN number is. So they should extend the deadline so that some of us can get it.
Maxwell Sook reporting from Tamale in northern Ghana.
And Abu, as you would expect, of course, Ghanaians have been responding to this. Angwei Aposi says only few people pay taxes in Ghana, and I believe this TIN registration will bring a lot of people to pay their taxes.
And Slangsi White wrote, I have nothing against it, if only they will use the tax to create jobs so that everybody can benefit from it.
Baya Jaramawa is actually supporting it, and he says, I have gotten my TIN. I'm proud as a Ghanaian.
Well, good for him.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, at least 90% of households in Malawi depend on wood or charcoal for cooking or heating. Although the government last year launched a national charcoal strategy to tackle the increasing cases of deforestation and to counter the high demand for charcoal, not much has really changed.
But Abu, not all hope is gone after all, because 26-year-old Ruben Cavallo has developed a cooking stove which uses maize bran in place of solid fuels like wood or charcoal. So, could this be the solution to save the forest and get many households to use alternative cooking method? Chimwemwe Pandata went to find out and filed this report.
The stove, made out of clay, has an insulated round thin hob placed in the middle to assist in heat transfer. The man behind this innovation, Ruben Cavallo, is feeding up the stove with maize bran. The innovation is timely since many homes are struggling with lack of firewood and expensive gas prices. With the new stove going for less than $5, it is not only cost-effective, but offers clean cooking solutions to both urban and rural households in Malawi. Access to electricity across Malawi is fairly limited or not accessible. Collecting firewood is generally considered women's work. Often, they have to travel far distances, searching for it or plug down tree roots. Cavallo grew in the outskirts of the capital, Lilongwe, and could easily relate such problems. As he tells me, it was one of the reasons he decided to find a solution.
When you use charcoal firewood, it only takes maybe an hour or maybe 30 minutes. When it comes to this, it comes up to 8 hours. You save a lot. The same time you save your money, the same time you save things like your forest, you save many things. You save also when using this gagambaula, because this gagambaula is very important and actually it's natural.
Cavallo says the use of maize bran will save the forest by allowing young trees to grow.
And this is 2018 and people are still burning up charcoals. And I'm thinking of maybe if we get to 2030, we have no tree in Malawi and we have no tree in Africa. So I urge every Malawian that we come up with this idea, support this idea, so that we can preserve our trees, we can preserve our natural.
Those who have used the innovation, such as Veronica Mkomera, say it is a reliable fuel source which does not release thick acrid smoke in the air. She feels adoption of such innovations will save countries from diverse impacts of climate change.
This stove uses maize bran, which is affordable, unlike using charcoal or firewood. I would also like to advise people to start using these stoves and other innovations deemed environmentally friendly as a catalyst towards preventing the trees from depletion.
The implementation of the newly introduced National Charcoal Strategy to fight deforestation is off on a slow start. Mr. Tembo Chanyenga is the Deputy Director for the Forestry Department in Malawi.
If charcoal production is going to be allowed, but only that charcoal which is coming from sustainable sources, then as a country we are going to progress. But I tell you what, the country, the people are not ready to take some of these challenges.
And that report was compiled by Chimwemwe Pandata in Malawi.
Now, Abu, to a different topic, because we know Facebook boss Zuckerberg is for the second time appearing before the US Congress over abuse of data. And you did ask people what they feel about these, and the comments are, of course...
Yeah, definitely. Emory Lambert says Facebook should take serious precautions and safeguard our privacy.
And George Asando thinks it's a business strategy.
Definitely.
That he's doing.
Thank you for all your responses. It's been a pleasure having you aboard. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipara Nyambura.
Until next time, bye now.